Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC and Westchester County Executive Republican Rob Astorino is with us now. Part of his response to the Newtown massacre was to invite public and private school officials from every jurisdiction in the county to a forum last week to kick off a new level of school safety collaboration between schools and the police. Former New York City Police Commissioner William Bratton was the speaker's feature and said this.
School administrators cannot solve the problem of school safety in their silo. Police cannot solve it in their silo. Fire and emergency response people cannot solve it in theirs. And the parents of the children that we are all obligated to protect cannot do it on their own. If you think you can, you are doomed to failure.
William Bratton in Westchester last week. County Executive Astorino, welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you, Brian. How are you?
I'm okay, thanks. A little nostalgia there for people in New York City. Probably haven't heard Bratton's voice in a while.
Especially that Boston accent.
Exactly. Tell us about this new initiative.
Well, it really, you know, when Newtown happened, I still remember that day very vividly because Newtown is very close to Northern Westchester. And so I was driving around at work. I heard it on the radio, got to the office, put on the TV, and just sort of slumped in my chair, and, you know, my thoughts just started turning to my own kids. I have a 9-year-old, an 8-year-old, and a 3-year-old. And I was just utterly choked up all day and canceled all my appearances for the whole weekend and just stayed home, I think, as a lot of parents did, you know, and trying to deal with this on a human level as a parent, you know, because you can't get away from the news reports or the imagery. And my kids were wondering what was going on. And so we had that discussion with them. And my son said to me, you know, what should I do if something like that ever happens? And, you know, forget being a county executive, as a parent, I wasn't sure of the answer. And he said, I would play dead. Hmm. And my daughter, who's 8, says, I would try to run. I would run out the window or try to run. I guess both are correct, and maybe both are wrong. I don't know. And so I sat there during the weekend saying, and obviously it was just the topic. Everywhere you go, every parent was doing the same thing. And we tried to sit there and say, all right, how can we be an answer to this? What should we do? And so I convened a meeting of all the commissioners and said, look, what, if anything, can we as a county do to sort of bring to the forefront the issue of school violence? How can we play a role in protecting our children? And public safety, community mental health, and health department all really were on the forefront of this. And what we found was, a lot of the answers we already have. Maybe some of them are in a manual that's never been used, or we do these kind of things every day, but the public or schools aren't aware of it. And what I said was, look, we don't have time. We're not going to start a new agency. We don't have money in this day and age of deficits and high taxes. So what can we do? And one thing that we found in our discussions were a lot of these school districts, they're all in silos. You know, the school district deals with just the educators and the parents, and maybe with the local police department. But there's no crosstalk around boundaries and over boundaries. And God forbid something happens in a school or anywhere where it's a big, big incident, it's going to be a multi-agency response. And oftentimes these agencies have not even communicated with one another. And what happens is going to be very frightening. You're going to have robotics. You're going to have SWAT teams, helicopters, tank-looking vehicles. What did a parent do when they show up? You know, the first reaction for a parent is, where's my child? I want to run in that building and get my child, even if it's after the incident, which could be the complete wrong thing to do. So what do we do if and when this happens? And what we found is they weren't communicating. And so we had this forum last week where, as you mentioned, Bill Bratton was there. And it really was the first time that everyone got around the same table and exchanged ideas. And we had over 300 educators for public, private, and parochial schools. All the police departments were there, and members of the public. We had the PTA Association was there. Community mental health were there. So it was a real good open discussion.
So this was mostly about what to do once an incident, God forbid, is already in progress, as opposed to prevention? Because most schools, I think, since the Columbine era, already have some kinds of standard procedures for prevention, like using only one entrance and a whole bunch of other things.
Well, it was interesting, Brian, because some of them, yes, you're right, most of them do. But I don't know if you remember, I'm sure you do, but remember back when we were in school, we would have fire drills. You know, the alarm would go off, we'd all get up, single file, the teacher would bring us out of whatever exit. We'd go to an area, and we'd be accounted for, the police and the fire would come, et cetera, et cetera. And after a while, we became accustomed to it, but we knew what to do. In these kind of instances, nobody really is going to know what to do, and it's going to be so chaotic. But how do we share best practices? How do we learn from Columbine, from Aurora, from the Sikh temple, all those kind of things where a lot of new information and things that went wrong come out? And this is an opportunity for everyone to share best practices. If one community is sort of beginning to upgrade or reevaluation, and another community has already done it, the likelihood that they've actually talked about this and shared best practices is very small. And this puts them all at the same table. So, yeah, right, this was part of the law enforcement and educator aspect. The next thing that we're doing is coming up in April, and that's the community mental health aspect and the public health aspect. We're viewing violence as almost like a disease. You know, it can be prevented, it can be cured, it can be dealt with. The mental health aspect of this, the gaps in the system, you know, and there's going to be some very uncomfortable conversations, but we're going to have them. And I think that's the important thing, where you'll have the faith-based community that often deals with these kind of situations on the street level. And in the pews, we'll have the mental health community that has a lot to say about what to look for and how to react, and this sort of gets overlooked. And the public health crisis, we'll have someone from the CDC in Atlanta that's going to come up and talk to us about this. So all of that needs to come together in a real way, in a human way. I mean, we're not going to pass a law that's going to do nothing. This is about, there's laws already there, but how do we really react as a community to prevent this? Now, again, getting back to my own kids, I'm dealing with this every day because some of the songs that are on the Disney Channel have violence or bad words or inappropriate. The games that they play on Xbox and all this other stuff, I mean, right. There's some real heavy violence that these kids at a very young age, you know, you look at play dates now, you know that term play date. Well, can my friend come over and have a play date? Well, what do? They go on the Xbox and they're blasting each other's heads off on video games, you know? So all of this has to be part of the conversation.
And what about guns? Because politically speaking, in a way, this is exactly what the NRA wants us to be talking about, right? Everything except guns. And we need to be talking about all these things.
Oh, yeah, no, absolutely.
Mental health, violent video games, school security, absolutely. But what Wayne LaPierre did in that famous appearance after Newtown was to list all of those things and say, it's all those things, it's not guns. And I think the political community has been trying to push back mostly and say, no, it's guns too, it's all of them.
It's all of them. There's no question about it. It is all of them. I think the big debate on the beginning of the, you know, after the tragedy was the guns. And I think that's what Congress and the president are looking at. That's certainly what was looked at and dealt with to some extent in Albany, although I really have a problem with the way the state legislature and the governor in Albany did what they did, and that it was rammed through with no public comment on either side. And that's not good government. But this is really taking it, you know, there's certain things on a local level we can do. I mean, the gun aspect is more of a macro. It's more of a statewide or national debate, and that debate's happening, and that's a good thing. On a local level, it's a practical level. What can we really do that can have an effect and can hopefully stem this kind of violence from happening or catch it before it does or deal with it as it is happening? Those are the kind of real-time things that we need to be practical about.
All right. A couple other things real quick before you go.
Sure.
On another issue, maybe you remember on the morning before Governor Cuomo gave his State of the State, you were on and I asked you what you would most want to hear.
And, and I didn't.
Well, you said basically mandate relief.
Yeah.
So did you hear it?
No, and I think that was a big concern with a lot of people around the state that's in school boards or counties or municipalities. We didn't. And that's a big concern of ours because we're all drowning right now. I'm under pensions, under Medicaid, under all these big ticket items that the state has to run, but they force the burden on the localities to pay for a lot of it or a share of it. And it's crushing us, and it's crushing our ability, unfortunately, to do the things on a local level that we still must do as part of government or that we want to do. You know, our park system, all these great things that make, in our case, Westchester, but it's really the same for a lot of other communities. But there's no more ability to pay for these things because, in our case, 85 cents of every dollar that we take in property tax goes right back up to Albany for some of their programs. I mean, that's crushing. That's ludicrous.
Are you gearing up for the effects of the sequester in any way, or don't you expect any impact at the county level?
We're still trying to figure out to what extent it would affect county government. I don't think it would be dramatic in any way, but we are looking into that, and if it does, we'll adjust accordingly on a local level. But I don't think it's going to be a crushing impact on us.
And on one more issue, and tell me if you're comfortable even broaching this or not. If not, it's fine. But I know because you told us on the show in the past that you used to host a radio show yourself in conjunction with the New York Archdiocese.
Yeah.
So as an involved Catholic, do you agree with the analysts who say the church is in the greatest crisis as it has faced in centuries between the sex abuse and its response to it and the global shortage of priests and entrenched positions on celibacy and gender and homosexuality that seem increasingly archaic to many people at this point of transition? Is it something you're thinking about? And I know you're in government now. You left that show and you joined government. But is it something that's on your mind?
Sure. I mean, I love the church. And I think most people who consider themselves Catholic, you know, care about their church. But we also, I mean, I'm repulsed by some of the things that have happened with the sex scandal. Who wouldn't be? And it's got to be dealt with swiftly and in an honest way. And I think some of it was swept under the rug, and that's really tarred the church in many ways. Some of it has been dealt with in a real forthright way. But, you know, these are things that they've got to clean up. There's no question about it. You know, one of the things about the church is it stands the test of time in a way. You know, they, whether it's popular or not, they're not going to change their position, right, wrong, or indifferent. And people can believe in it or not, you know, but they don't generally, the church is still sending postcards out. I think they just discovered the internet. You know, they're generally a century behind. But as far as this stuff, Brian, you're absolutely right. I mean, they have to have a real honest discussion in Rome on how to deal with some of this stuff in a real forthright way. I mean, the sex scandal is just repulsive, and it's done so much to tar the church. And I think that's why some of the people are leaving the church. Is the trust, that wall, that you know, how could that be allowed to happen? I mean, it's disgusting and it's harmful. And then I think that's what bothers Catholics the most, is it hasn't been dealt with properly.
Rob Estorino, Westchester County Executive. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Brian. Anytime.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, for the first time, a baby seems to have been cured of HIV. We'll look at this unique case and its implications. Stay with us.